fixed supply breaks people's brain because they can't understand it. Like, the only real analogy you could make is like a kick-ass penthouse in Manhattan. Like, there's only so many of them. What else really has, like, even in Manhattan, they can make new buildings, right? They can figure out how to cram more people on top of each other, but you can't really, it's the most inelastic supply it could possibly be. When there's a bid, there's a bid. With Ross Ulbricht, you know, that whole case was a total, you know, makes the Soviet Union look like they had a very fair and just judicial system. Like, if you go study the case, all of the arguments Ross's defense made.
Bing bong, I'm back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, the brains behind Cascader, Jim himself, in the building, in Pleb Lab. But Jim, there's been something that's been on my mind here recently. We've had Elon release the Twitter files. We've had Elon talk about AI and the need for regulation of all this. So is AI going in a direction where we could potentially embrace this technology, but it could lead to something like a 1984 where we're having Big Brother watch over and manipulate the strings? What worries you about AI going forward?
Yeah, I mean, just as somebody that's very focused on Bitcoin and on privacy, it's pretty terrifying. And I think kind of the last 10 years are sort of a warm up for what we're in for the next 10 years, where everything you Google, you know, think about all the things that you can glean about somebody's state of mind when they're Googling things, right? How that can be abused. Well, before you kind of had the luxury of, you know, let's say you give up some information, maybe your IP service provider, your ISP is spying on you. So what? They might be too lazy to check it. Well, now it's so easy. You can find a needle in a haystack with AI. So I think that's the big concern behind this stuff. And then also, as you mentioned, just, you know, all these people trying to erect these regulatory moats to keep themselves, you know, with this technology and us without it. And so a big part of our mission at Cascader is to kind of make it sort of like the Second Amendment, where everyone has the right to use this stuff and use it for, at least for positive means, to increase their productivity, you know, learn about new things, and use it in a way where they're not being spied on or being manipulated.
Yeah, the manipulation's an interesting thing, right? Because, you know, with this past election, everybody was like, you know, if you Google Kamala Harris, you know, you see only the positive articles about her. But if you Google Donald Trump, you see all the negative ones, right? So there's always been this bias, and people have kind of felt that bias going forward. Now, what would be like the benefit of that when people are outwardly seeing it? Do you think people are still getting tricked by these things?
Yeah, I think that's a well-documented psychological effect. I don't remember who the guest was, but there was someone, Rogan had somebody on who specifically studies this. And, you know, he admitted, you know, I'm a bleeding heart liberal, but I think this is wrong, the way they're suppressing bad information about Hillary Clinton and using that, you know, and there, I don't remember the exact effect, but it has a measurable effect on election results. And so that's pretty unethical. I think the good news for us is that, you know, Google is sort of going through its own empire cycle. You know, they say, you know, good men create, or hard, what is it? Hard men create good times. I forget the quote.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they had, you know, they've been dominant for so long, sort of like how, you know, IBM and all these other companies were before them, but now they're kind of getting end around by these LLMs. You see ChatGPT starting to take their market share away. They're starting to become less relevant. Their attempt to do Gemini didn't work because they're ossifying. So I think that's kind of good news on that front. But then you worry, well, what are these other people going to do? What are the Anthropics, the ChatGPT, the Groks? You know, what are they going to, what kind of bias are they going to insert into the conversation? And so I'm incredibly thankful that shout out to Zuck for releasing these open source models. At least gives us a fighting chance of having AI that's more decentralized, at least has a prayer of being less biased.
Is it possible to make an AI without any sort of bias?
I think that's impossible, because fundamentally speaking, you're training this machine. And everyone says, when they say AI, what they really mean is large language models. And really what it is a machine that's really good at predicting what to say next. It's like autocorrect on steroids. And I have talks on my YouTube where I talk about this, but it's autocorrect on steroids trained on some pretty smart people on the internet, especially like internet forums. So that's why people use it for code often, is because there's some random esoteric problem you had and it's able to recall that in real time or put two and two together of what a reasonable solution would be for you. And so it's incredibly useful for troubleshooting, for things like that. But it also, because of the safety risks, which I understand, some of them are legitimate where it's like, they don't want you talking about how to make a bomb, but there's others where it's like, all right, well, you know, what was it with Alexa? Wouldn't tell you why you should vote for Donald Trump, but they'll tell you why you should vote for Kamala. You know, that's BS. You know, that's not what we want.
Yeah. But we've basically been listened to this entire time, right? I mean, like if you have an iPhone, you know, if you have Siri enabled, like all these things are always going to be listening to you. Amazon Alexas are also becoming growingly popular. So like, I guess, where would the bias be? Is it built in? Is there a way that to get like, I guess, the bias to a point where it's like kind of thinking the way you're thinking, I guess, in a sense? Or is it always going to be, you know, the back end programmers that are going to be able to, I guess, manipulate the bias, so to speak?
Yeah, I think maybe it's a combination of those things. I think maybe in certain respects, the bias isn't as bad as we think. It's this new thing, so it's kind of scary, and we kind of project these big fears onto it. And I honestly don't think it's gotten that bad yet. Like, I'll use ChatGPT for certain things, and I understand there's certain things it's going to not let me do or certain biases may have, but generally speaking, it's just letting me do my thing. What's scary is if one of these companies gets the monopoly, then they could impose their politics on you. That's even scarier.
Well, yeah, I mean, Google's basically had a monopoly then, if you think about it, from search engines, right? Because the top two search engines are Google and YouTube, and they're both owned by Google.
Right. And that's part of why they got so out of control, is because they got hit a point where they didn't have to provide the best product anymore. It was just about, after a certain point, imposing their politics on you.
Yeah. I mean, it's become basically a verb, like, I'll Google that. You know, like, it's not like, all right, I'm going to go search for that. And it's almost like, I mean, it's to a lesser extent, similar to like Uber, like, right? We don't say we're going to get a cab. We're going to say we're getting an Uber. And there's really like Uber and Lyft. And then when you go to other countries, you're like, all right, well, what's their version of Uber maybe? But at a certain extent, that's like kind of what everybody uses, right? For is Google. And that's how they, I guess, like talk about it. So is Google, in a sense, the most powerful country there is, or company there is, to be able, they can, like implicit bias on nearly anything?
That was a Freudian slip. They might as well be a country at this point. I mean, my personal perspective is they very much, the CIA and deep state had fingerprints all over that company very, very early. So I think that influenced how they see the world. And also, you look at Sergey Brin, he grew up in the Soviet Union. So it's almost kind of like how abusers repeat the same behaviors, like they'll recreate the abuse they suffered. It's kind of similar in that way, right? And I think he's pretty probably pretty callous and uncaring about that aspect of what his creation has become. But I think they, it's what Peter Thiel says. It says competition is for losers, right? And so the goal of a lot of companies is to eliminate competition. I think truthfully, as long as we're not erecting serious regulatory moats and we have a healthy ecosystem of entrepreneurs, that's a very good thing. One book that I really enjoyed recently was called The Myth of Capitalism by Tepper. I heard about it on a podcast that Eric Prince recommended it. And it's basically just about how a lot of industries trend toward one, maybe two or three oligopolies. And at that point, you know, the government isn't going to come in and take them out in most cases. And they're able to just lower quality and increase price. And that's not what we want in a healthy system. So a big part of the ethos at Cascader is we want to build this ecosystem of Bitcoin payable AI services so that developers anywhere can create useful AI systems. They can be used by anyone anywhere. They can also be scanned by AI systems, because at the end of the day, these LLMs are sophisticated enough to understand language. They can look at the tools they have available and put them together. And that's effectively what an agent is it's an LLM that's very good at selecting and planning how to use tools in a sequential fashion. So that's what we're laying the groundwork for.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, is there a future here where, I mean, like the theory is that AI is going to make everybody more efficient, right? And like, that's kind of the next wave, right? We've had the internet, which has made everybody, you know, able to work remotely, kind of have more access to information, make things move quicker. How quickly do you think that this AI revolution is going to change things?
I think it's ongoing. It's been coming. I think there might be some froth, truthfully, because I think a lot of these LLM inferences have been subsidized. And so there might be a correction where, you know, the super cheap, you know, run 500 ChatGPT queries till I get what I want, like that. Those days might be over and you might have to be more judicious about how you use it. But it is, it could also conceivably hit another gear. I don't know if you saw this, but there was some crazy valuation that ChatGPT got. It's like the highest ever, and it got them like 10 months of runway. I don't know if that's fully accurate. You're more the finance guy than me.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that, but I do know that AI is basically being valued. I don't remember the exact figure, but basically the biggest industry that's coming forward. Like at first it was, you know, the tech kind of boom. And it seems like we're getting into the AI boom where every company is trying to have some sort of AI strategy, just like with Bitcoin, right? I mean, they're having some sort of Bitcoin strategy on their balance sheet. I think that's coming. But as far as like technology goes and implementation, they need to have some sort of AI or LLM or, you know, whatever implemented into it, whether it's a, you know, Microsoft building their own or it's, you know, some other banking company or bank that, you know, doesn't want to give all their data to Google and ChatGPT and all that. So they're trying to build their own LLM. Like anybody and everybody seems to be trying to embrace AI in a sense. And it seems like it's going to boom and a lot of things are going to fail, but there's going to be a couple things that succeed.
Yeah. And I think you brought up some great points. And I think AI really is a general purpose technology. And in the same way that the internet is, you don't ask what company is an internet company. You know, all of them in a sense are internet companies, maybe some more than others, but they have to have an internet strategy, right? You can't get by without it. So I think AI is going to take a similar path in the next 3 to 5 years. And as you point out, there's certain industries where information is very sensitive. We actually do business, you know, we do implementation services for businesses. So we've seen that firsthand, how you have to be really cognizant of the way you're using data, especially when it's a medical, legal type of application where you know, information falling to the wrong hands is a big problem. And shout out to the former Mutiny guys. They rebranded as a company called Open Secret. They're doing some really cool stuff with making really secure LLMs where it's end-to-end encrypted between the client and the secure compute. So there's no way to actually view the queries. And I think that type of thing is going to be very important for especially those types of applications, but even just going forward, as we point out, you know, the information you've been giving out to the internet broadly, it was kind of like finding a needle in a haystack before. Now you have this LLM that's really good at understanding, making sense of unstructured data, and that may not always have positive ends. You know, the term doxing wasn't even a thing until what, 10 years ago, when people realized, hey, I can go to this person's house and get a mob and harass them. You know, that wasn't really a thing before that. There were yellow pages where you could find where everybody lived.
Yeah. And I don't even, to be honest, I don't even know if like everybody realizes how much of your information is on the internet yet. I mean, I don't think people realize like, all right, if I have your phone number, I can figure out, you know, where you've lived, like all these different kinds of things. And it's just all this stuff is just open and public. What is it going to take to, I guess, turn the general public and have them realize? Because, I mean, we've had the Twitter files be released. We've had these things. You know, people are well aware, I think, now that they've been, you know, fed some sort of bias at some point in time, whether it's through Google or social media. What do you think it's going to take to get people over the edge? Is it going to be some sort of event?
Yeah, I don't know. I think these scams are going to keep getting more and more sophisticated. So I think maybe that's one vector, but I think people have to touch the stove to really understand. And I really don't like the term, I have nothing to hide, so I don't need privacy. You know, if that's true, then you know, give a stranger on the street your phone to play with for 10 hours or let him follow you in the bathroom. Yeah. That's just not, that's not a good answer to that. Everyone wants privacy, at least to some extent. I understand that you may not be actively committing a crime, but even that, they say the average person commits some number of crimes in their life. They don't realize it. So even there, that's probably wrong, but suppose that's true. Suppose you've never, you're a Boy Scout, you've never committed a crime in your life. There's still information about you out there. Somebody could use to blackmail you or coerce you in some messed up way.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people haven't experienced that. Maybe they've, you know, lived a privileged life where they haven't had anything bad happen to them, but I'm hoping some enough people get the wake up call to where this stuff becomes standard procedure. You know, what we're doing at Cascader, what they're doing at Open Secret, I'm hoping more of that becomes the default as we realize how just how dangerous LLMs can be in the wrong hands.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny. A video popped in my head of like the Nelk Boys. They like go knock on people's door who had the, you know, Biden Harris or, you know, Harris Waltz signs on their door, and they're like, oh, like, would you want to sign this and let like illegal immigrants, like, you know, find shelter? Do you think that they should find housing? And then of course they open it, they sign it, and then they have a bus pull up. They're like, all right, boys, like, yeah, come on in.
I didn't know it was the Nelk Boys. I'm not as up on my influencer culture as you.
But
I thought those were hilarious. Those are amazing.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like that, right? Yeah. Everything's like kind of like good in theory. Like it sounds like, oh, you know, morally high. Like,
yeah,
I don't have anything to hide.
In the abstract, right? You have nothing to hide, but when push comes to shove, you wouldn't give a stranger your phone to play with for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And you better, because you don't know what they're going to find. There might be something you didn't even realize, you know?
Yeah. Right. I mean, and how much information do we have on our phones? All right. I mean, banking information, like all this other kind of stuff, you know, probably have pictures of your license. Maybe some people have stored in their cloud, you know, their social security number, all these different kinds of things that people don't realize that are just like on every single person's phone. And it's like Apple has access to that. Like, who knows? Like, you give, like, I mean, that's the big thing was like now, like Apple kind of made that public where it's like, all right, do you want this app to track what you're doing on everything else? I don't think people realized for a long time that apps were
by default doing.
Yeah.
That.
Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code Green Candle for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
Well, Uber got in big trouble. One series I enjoyed a lot was Super Pumped. Have you seen that?
It's no.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt playing the Uber guy. And they talk about all like the black ops type stuff they were doing where they were, you know, effectively spying on people with their phones and looking into the back seat of Ubers while they're running, you know, stuff like that. There weren't as tight controls earlier in the days of mobile apps. I think they're tighter now, they're better, but you know, it's still the Wild West in a lot of ways.
What do you think's more, I guess, like the bigger aspect of like the Wild West, like AI protocols and kind of like the openness of that, where, or even like websites where you can get their cookies, you know, who knows who's like looking through this camera over here, or phone apps? What do you think's like worse right now?
You're talking about just general purpose internet or phones? I think probably phones, just because it's tied to your location, probably almost all the time.
Yeah.
And so that can infer a lot of information about you, you know, like, if, I don't know if you know what the EFF is. They're like Electronic Freedom Frontier. So they're like original cypherpunks that fought, you know, Bernstein versus the US, which says encryption is a form of speech and protected under the First Amendment, which is kind of being relitigated by the federal government right now with the Samurai case. But, it basically the EFF brought up good points about how, you know, you don't even, it's pretty abstract. Like you could get a email from a congressman with a subject mail and then someone could see, oh, you called them right after. So that means you're passionate about that issue, you know, and that's like a very simple example, but it's like expand that to all of the actions you take on the internet that are electronic every day. And it's like, you know, there's a lot of, there's a huge paper trail. Even if you don't see every little detail, you can piece together somebody's psychological makeup in a way that's pretty scary.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely, yeah. I mean, I get into my car right now and it tells me where I'm going to go basically because it just connects to there and it just, yeah. Apple tracks where I'm going all the time. So
yeah, like Apple always knows what types of podcasts I like when, and I'm yeah. like, what? How do you know that?
Yeah. It's like Apple almost seems to know when I need to go to the bathroom too. Yeah. It's like I get in a routine. It's like absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I recently switched to a Google phone and it's awesome just for the simple reason that because it's not phoning home to Google every 5 seconds, it has more battery life. Just that reason alone. There's some points that are kind of have some friction, but I've been using Calyx OS. It's pretty good. I'll probably switch to Graphene eventually, be a real hacker, but Calyx is pretty solid. If you have an Android phone, it's solid. There's certain things I missed from being in the ecosystem on iPhone, but
yeah, I mean, it's a lot of people just give up their ease of, or a lot of things for convenience, basically. But I want to get into, you brought up the Samurai case, right? So, you know, I guess, yeah, let's, for those who don't know, dive into a little bit of what's going on there. Like, what is Samurai and what's going on?
I don't know all the details. And in fact, I probably haven't tracked this in a couple months. So I'm behind the times. But essentially, they created software that allows you to do what's called a coin join. For those of you that don't know, every Bitcoin transaction can have any, I think, at least 256 inputs or outputs. And so what you can do is if everyone, it's like going into a room and, you know, putting a bunch of $100 bills and then just swapping them with people. That's effectively what they're doing. And what that does is creates uncertainty on the source of the funds and enhances privacy. Well, the United States government, I don't remember when they did it. Was it like this year?
Yeah, it was earlier this year, I think.
So they went in, they had servers in Iceland. They went and physically seized the servers. I think they might have gotten in. They shut down the website. They shut down that service called Whirlpool. And that was a pretty big blow for privacy. There were some questions around the way they implemented things. Was it really maximally private? But I think just the fact that they were so brazenly going after those guys is a scary sign of what would have probably happened if Kamala won, because they were trying to fight Bernstein versus US. Bernstein versus US is totally clear that encryption is protected under the First Amendment. You can't go after people for that. And even FinCEN's own guidelines said, you know, what they were doing was well within the law, but they made a few mistakes. They said some things they probably shouldn't have said about Russian sanctions that probably made them a target. And now this is, you know, open, you know, it was open season earlier this year. And you look at that combined with the Telegram guy getting arrested and you're like, are we going to have a First Amendment if Kamala wins? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm pretty relieved that she didn't win for that reason. I'm a big civil liberties guy.
Yeah. And like dive into, so the Telegram CEO, Telegram's another messaging app, is, you know, allegedly very encrypted, like from end to end as well. So yeah, I mean, like, as far as that goes, like, how do you see that relating to AI and, I guess relating to almost the First Amendment free speech relating to code? Do you think that they're going to treat it as free speech going forward or not? Because I mean, we also have Ross Ulbricht. I mean, it's been a big kind of, rally cry for Bitcoiners because Ross was, you know, kind of the creator of this, Silk Road and, yeah, he's been locked up, right, for just his code. So, yeah, go into a little bit of that.
Yeah, so I think we have a better chance than we have had in a long time to solidify that, because I think not only did we stop the tide of that type of tyranny, to some extent, there's also a reaction against it after, you know, Trump possibly going back and fighting back against a lot of the stuff they did to him and violating his Sixth Amendment rights to a fair trial. So I think we're in a better environment than we could have been, but who knows? When somebody puts on the ring of power, are they going to hold up their end of the bargain and actually follow through and protect people's civil liberties? So I think the thing with Telegram is scary. One point I want to make is that it is not very well encrypted. They use some kind of proprietary stuff, and the government wanted him to put a backdoor in, and that's why they arrested him. And make no mistake, I don't think that arrest can happen without the U.S. State Department's official approval.
Yeah, because didn't he get arrested in like another country, like in Europe? France. In France, yeah.
He's a French citizen. I think he's a French citizen and like a Dubai citizen. And they caught him, and part of it was statecraft. I think they were concerned that, you know, he could be collaborating with the Kremlin in some way. Fine, but that's just a scary precedent. They always pick the easiest target first, right? And then and then they'll expand everyone else. So I think there's some good news on the Samurai front. I think the Samurai and Tornado Cash attorneys stepping down. So maybe we'll see some common sense on those cases. Maybe we'll see more common sense in general on the First Amendment. And then with Ross Ulbricht, you know, that whole case was a total, you know, makes the Soviet Union look like they had a very fair and just judicial system. Like if you go study the case, they basically, all of the arguments Ross's defense made was just objected down every time, and it was sustained. So I don't think that was really a fair trial. They also biased the judge by basically saying that all of these murder for hire claims that the government made, that they were never able to substantiate or prove. They kind of snuck that past the goalie and then let that frame the whole trial, the whole judge's mindset, even possibly the jury's mindset, and never proved it beyond a reasonable doubt. And, you know, there was even questions of whether or not he's actually Dread Pirate Roberts. I don't know.
Well, on top of that, what impact do you think Elon has had in protecting the First Amendment?
I mean, I think he's certainly saying the right things. I mean, I personally don't fully trust him. At the end of the day, he's, you know, kind of in with this crowd, the Palantir, you know, Peter Thiel crowd. So I don't fully trust them. You know, they are shitcoining. You know, it's hard to trust somebody like that. But from my perspective, I at least like that they're virtue signaling about it, just like how other companies are virtue signaling about privacy. At least that means there's an appetite for it. But I don't take anything they say for real. I mean, just the fact that you have to verify yourself on Twitter is bullshit. Like they're using Israeli, a company spun out by Israeli intelligence to verify your identity. Does that make any sense? Like you actually care about free speech. You know, half the founding fathers were anons. Being anonymous is a human right in my eyes. It's not acceptable.
Now, I don't recall, but do you have to verify it only if you get the blue check, or is it always any account?
I think so, but they try to dance around it through that. But
yeah,
you know, also they try to get you to give a phone number, and if it's a phone number they don't like, then sorry, you can't do it. So that kind of kills the anonymity. And I don't think anyone should do anything childish or foolish with it, but I think anonymity is value because then you're forced to look at the actual merits of what the person's saying. You can't just attack them on their character. You can't intimidate them. You know, one of the things that bothered me a lot of the previous regime was Taylor Lorenz, that crazy reporter going and tracking down the libs of TikTok lady. You know, she's a middle-aged woman from the South, you know, who's all she was doing was posting what people on the left were saying. She wasn't doing anything mean. She wasn't harassing anyone. She was showing what they're saying. And that led to German intelligence collaborating with a reporter to dox and harass this person. That's just ridiculous.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at the Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
Yeah, I think she went at Dave Portnoy too for, like, I don't know, just saying he's like some right-wing extremist or something like that as well. Like, that reporter was just very like...
Well, she was celebrating the death of the CEO. Did you see that?
Oh, no.
She's just a ghoul. So the guy that got shot, she was saying, that, you know, Luigi's a good guy. I don't know if she actually said that.
No,
she said something along those lines, though, that it was okay.
Yeah, she said, I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something along the lines of, like, yeah, like, I don't wish death on anybody, but in this case, kind of thing, which is absolutely insane, which I don't, I don't know. That's another rabbit hole to go down, to say the very least. But, you know, with all this, right, do you think, like, the bias has influenced the thinking of the left or the right here for, you know, the past 4, 8, 12, however long, many years? Because it seems like we've gotten to very extreme points in both sides of things where, you know, that could either be attributed to bias in, like, searching, you know, AI, maybe AI bias, or you know, suppression and bias of social media, maybe the group think. Like, how do you think that we've gotten to this place?
Yeah, I think people realize that information is power, right? So they're going to manipulate it to how they see fit, and sometimes it's very simple, you know, Machiavellian reasons for business gain, right? Where you're going to suppress, you know, bad stories about Google if you are Google, right? Something simple like that. And then it gets more and more sophisticated. There might even be, you know, certain races where they may favor the Republican over the Democrat. I don't think it's always against every Republican. It's you know, probably the ones that won't play ball are the ones that are most at risk, that won't play ball with the establishment. And this happens in all human systems, right? They're always going to try to, you know, slant the table in their favor. So it's unsurprising. I think over time, we're going to have to keep evolving. And I think, you know, once again, I say it's like the Second Amendment. One of the things I try to do is educate people on how this stuff actually works, so that's not mystical to you. You know, it's just autocorrect on steroids in a lot of ways. Like, it's not a magical box. It's not your new AI overlord. It's a machine that you can master, just like you master the machine of your car, of your firearm, of your TV, whatever it is. It's a tool that you should be using to achieve your ends, and not the other way around.
Yeah, let's dive into that point a little bit more, because I think, like, the way that I see AI would be kind of helping break down a lot of information, and, you know, giving me a good summary of things, like almost like a Google replacement.
Yeah.
Yes. Am I wrong for thinking that? Because you're smirking over here, man.
Yeah. Well, I know. I happen to know. And by the time this comes out, it'll be out, but we have a new tool. It's called Pull That Up, Jamie. So shout out to Joe Rogan and Jamie. Effectively, we want to make a virtual assistant for someone like you that's doing research and you want to just find things fast. So we took some great open source tools. One of them is called SeerXNG, which allows you to just pull search results from the top 5 or 6 search engines. And then also just other tools for accessing Claude and ChatGPT. Will eventually add Ollama, will eventually add the Open Secret stuff that they're working on, where it's totally anonymous and encrypted. But the idea is that you get these search results, then you have an LLM summarize them and give you citations. So it's a lot like Perplexity, but doing it the base way, doing it the private way, doing it the cypherpunk way. And we think that I don't use Google anymore because I have Jamie. I just have it pull up, you know, whatever I happen to want to research. Still in early days. You're on the alpha program. I know that you're using it all the time. And that's exactly what it's for, is to just help.
Does that
you.
Mean you're spying on me? What the hell, Jim?
Well, no, you told me you're using it every day, but
I'm joking with you.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I don't do the queries, but I just put usage. Okay, you used it X number of times in a day.
Yeah.
And that's what I do, just because I want to know, you know, which people that I gave it to for free will.
Yeah.
Are using it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm joking with Jim, of course, but yeah, it's a great tool, and it's definitely changed the way that I do research, especially for, like, my live streams that I'm starting to roll out. Like, it gives me great articles and things like that, which is, you know, kind of the way I see to use AI. But what are some of the other things do you think that AI is going to, I guess, develop into going forward?
Yeah, I think it's already, just because of the nature of how it works, it already has a mastery over language, and therefore in a lot of ways it has mastery over translations if you use it correctly. So we actually just did like a business implementation where we take these long videos and we transcribe and translate them, and then you can watch them back in real time. So things like that, I think being able to, for someone like you, being able to expand your reach by doing all that and then adding, you know, your voice in a different language, right? Those types of things will expand your reach. I think all the things you're already using it for will keep getting better and more reliable and more automatic, to the point where, you know, you release the pod and then maybe it'll send you a few drafts of, you know, proposed articles, you know, things like that, just adding more and more automation to your life.
Yeah, and I definitely think that that is the way that things are going to develop, except for the one worry that I do have is the regulation that Elon has kind of said that we needed for AI. So what's your viewpoint on like potential regulation, and do you think we need it?
I'm pretty categorically against regulation simply for the fact that it usually makes things worse, and it usually just creates a few winners and a ton of losers. So I'm against it from that standpoint. I think Mark Andreessen kind of agrees with me. He went on Joe Rogan and talked about how, you know, he left a meeting with Kamala horrified, where they're like, don't even start AI projects. We already picked who's going to be doing AI in this country. And that just reeks of, you know, central planning and communism to me. So I don't think they're a good idea. You know, I think maybe penalties for things being misused in a way that's negligent, I think might make some sense, but I think they'll probably overdo it and possibly create regulatory moats that shouldn't be there.
What do you mean penalties for misuse? Give me
an example. Well, you know, and I try to be cognizant of the way I do things and not make them like super easy to do, but you know, somebody figuring out how to do something violent,
figuring out how to make a new drug,
how to, you know what I mean? That they shouldn't be doing, you know, spin the wheel. I think what always amazes me is no matter what I make, somehow someone somewhere finds a way to do something bad with it. And I don't think you should be like, you know, as if you did it yourself, but there should be some, there should probably be some due diligence you do, but I think that should be like a civil case. I don't think it should be like a criminal case, or like you're not even allowed to be in this country doing this thing if you're not playing ball with what we want. And I think that's a problem.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, that makes sense. So do you think the future for everything is going to be, in a sense, trying to, would there be a way where we get to maybe a decentralized AI, or is that just like using too many buzzwords?
Well, it depends on what you mean by that. I mean, my eyes, a decentralized AI world, and that's what we're trying to build towards, is, you know, developers from anywhere, users from anywhere, using AI agents that are specifically tuned, preferably open source, but specifically tuned to look after their best interests, not some corporation's best interest, not somebody who's trying to sell you something's best interest, but actually genuinely your interests. And then it's almost like your personal Jarvis, to borrow a sci-fi term, or your personal, you know, guardian, in a sense that's, you're looking out for your best interests and, you know, helping you self-actualize, not just get by, but actually develop good, healthy habits, become, you know, all that you were meant to be. Like that is what I want to create. And that's what we're working towards.
Gotcha. Now, all right. So you've mentioned like the potential negatives of, you know, if Kamala would have won the election, what are some of the positives you see for AI now that Trump is in office, or some of the things that you're hoping that he helps just makes your life a little easier?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting that the Doge is kind of embracing AI, right? Well, now you have all of these documents that are sitting out there, once again, needles in haystacks, and they're going to be able to use AI to analyze those much quicker and come to a conclusion about who said what to whom, you know, in the context. In some ways it's scary because you wonder if, like regulation, it's going to be abused, but it's interesting to think, okay, well, all these guys that thought that they were, you know, in the clear, and that they weren't going to have to, you know, abide by the law inside government. They're going to have, you know, their number called and have to be accountable. And I think that's tremendously important just from a deterrence standpoint of, you know, a lot of the nonsense we saw go on in the last 5 to 10 years.
What do you mean the nonsense that we've seen?
Just like the way they spy on their political rivals, the way that they, you know, string up cases. It's awfully conspicuous, like how all of these cases against Trump came out at the exact same time. You know, what's that all about? You know, some other happenings of, you know, how they bought the Russiagate hoax, you know, Obama spying on Trump during his campaign, Trump talking about it publicly and Obama ridiculing him for saying that, but it was actually true. You know, it's stuff like that, where it's just, it's gone way too far, and it just needs to get reined way back in. We need to be going after people that are actually committing crimes in this country and, you know, actually threatening the public in some meaningful way, not just people that you want to string up.
Yeah, 100%. And just, I guess like getting people who are potentially your competition and trying to bring them down with illegal use of, legalities, right? Like just kind of like strong arming them in a sense.
We just got to get back to the Bill of Rights, man. The Bill of Rights is awesome. I was just watching The Patriot yesterday. My, my 5-year-old nephew, it's his favorite movie. Now The Patriot, he calls it Army movie. So I'm getting ready to hang out with him and play Army movie games with him when I see him for Christmas. But, you know, that I love that movie because it's an illustration of the Bill of Rights, what it's about. We need to get back to the Bill of Rights. It's a good idea. A lot of what I do, I see as trying to get in there and help with the Bill of Rights, First, Fourth, Fifth, and even Sixth Amendment. We've done some legal tech stuff. So I deeply believe in that stuff. I think we just need to get back to that. And look, if the Bill of Rights and the Constitution is the highest law in the land, then people need to be held accountable for violating the highest law in the land. And I'm not vindictive. I don't want to see them punished for no reason, but there has to be deterrence for people in the future that would violate people's civil liberties because they're really important.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just think like to get back to, I guess, like the roots of America. I think we've really kind of gotten away from that, and I think it's starting to see a reversion back in the other direction, where we're getting closer back to that. Where I think swung the opposite direction. Now, do you think that this is going to be a wave, or do you think this is going to be like a trend where we're going to kind of start to get back to it?
I have no idea. You know, we kind of saw the wave in 2020 where it seemed like the left was really in control and it felt like that was never going to end, but we kind of saw it swing back a little bit. I don't know what's going to happen next. I mean, I hope we just get back to, as you said, get back to fundamentals. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so bullish on Bitcoin, why I love Bitcoiners, because there's just a level of seriousness about that. You know, the money is nice. The number go up is nice, but there's just a level of seriousness about, you know, we really are fighting for our way of life and for freedom itself. And that's why I'm incredibly honored to just be among Bitcoiners all the time at Pleb Lab and in the commons and everywhere.
How big of a role do you think Bitcoin has played in that? Do you think that, because it seems like, you know, RFK, to his credit, he came to the Bitcoin conference this year and last year. You know, say what you want about RFK, but he, in my opinion, he was never really had a shot to win the presidential election because of, you know, running as an independent. That's just the way it goes, right? It's a two-party system. But he does have a decent amount of influence. And I think him coming onto Trump's side of things and Bitcoin becoming a strategic reserve kind of in the background, you know, of RFK with also the Make America Healthy Again, like all the things that he's kind of bringing to the table, like I think definitely gave Trump a big leg up where we saw a lifelong Democrat flip the script and go into the Republican side of things. So, you know, do you think it's Bitcoin played a major role in that? Do you think it's still big enough in the public to, or do you think it's big enough in the public to do something like that? One of the most crooked industries, most fiat industries there is the health insurance industry. Let's be honest. You don't even need health insurance. If you could find somebody that would help you find awesome doctors, negotiate your bills, and fund those bills through a peer-to-peer funding platform, Would you take it? That sounds pretty appealing to me, and that's why I've joined forces with CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is a place that you can do that all in one. One giant place, you can have a group of peers where they will help you find the best healthcare that you need. On top of all that, I can help get you a discount to get you on your feet and get everything started. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE for 3 months at $99. And with all of this, you will get the healthcare you need. You don't have to worry about going through to the doctor, negotiating, everything like that. Did you hit your deductible? Did you not? Is this insurance company going to cover this claim? Is it not? You don't have to worry about any of that stress. And you can just get CrowdHealth behind you where they can help you get the number one place to have a health insurance alternative. So join the revolution. Go to joincrowdhealth.com. Tell them that Green Candle sent you. And join me and the rest of the great CrowdHealth users in this peer-to-peer funding platform. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
I think the honey badgers getting rich and getting more influential is always a good thing. So I think that's one of the ways that Bitcoin fixes the world. I think it fixes the incentives as well over time. I don't think we're quite there yet. I think we still have a lot more work to do. So we shouldn't be complacent, but it's incredibly encouraging that you see Trump come to the Libertarian Convention. He comes to the Bitcoin Convention to pander to us, essentially. So that's always a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that that's going to happen more? Do you think Bitcoin's going to be more of a focal point as we go along? Because, I mean, we saw 2 years ago, we saw, you know, a lot of senators come into the Twitter spaces to try to, you know, jack up their following. But it was like kind of, you know, here or there. It seems like everybody's starting to have some sort of Bitcoin policy now.
Yeah, I think it's starting to get to the point where, I mean, I think it probably already had escape velocity, but now it's like really solidifying to the point where it's like there's no going back. And I think that's obviously a positive thing. But, you know, I don't know if he's got, who knows, maybe the guys will turn their back on Bitcoin. I was at the speech with Trump. I certainly don't think he understood Bitcoin that well. I think RFK probably does, but I don't think he truly understands that. You know, he ended it by saying, go play with your Bitcoin and crypto. Like, it doesn't sound like a laser-eyed guy to me.
Yeah, but the one thing about Trump that I will give him credit for is that anytime I've heard him talk about Bitcoin, even years prior, he would say that Bitcoin was an attack on the US dollar, or he would kind of like talk about Bitcoin in that sense, where it wasn't just like some funny internet money. I think he recognized this entire time that it is kind of an alternative to the dollar, and getting to that aspect. But I agree with you. I think it was just another campaign speech for him to kind of come out there.
It's another day at the office, man.
Yeah. But the guy's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, I give him credit. I'm not hating at all, but I don't expect him to be your savior. I don't expect him to just get behind Bitcoin. Like, he's not going to be. We still have a lot of work to do. Now we have a fighting chance. Cause I think if the election went the other way, you know, I don't think that samurai attorney steps down. I think they're going full court press on everything. They're going full court press on censoring AI, on censoring the internet, on trying to shut down Bitcoin in the United States. I think we at least bought ourselves another 4 years. Maybe it's more, but I think we want Bitcoin to be as strong as possible before, you know, any kind of big conflict that actually involves Bitcoin.
Yeah. So what is a big conflict that you like are kind of alluding to?
What is it? A 6102? I mean, that's a possibility. There's also just the possibility of them taxing it to death, or them trying to, you know, dox everyone who's ever held Bitcoin, or trying to attack it with quantum. Who knows? I think those are possibilities. I think we'll come out on top in the end, but it's, don't think we're out of the woods just because there's one election with a pro Bitcoin president. The worst thing that could happen right now is everyone gets complacent.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that I've seen kind of doing, you know, I think since Trump has gotten the nod to become the next president in the past, like 4 or 5 weeks, we've seen a multiple nation states come and make a decision on Bitcoin just going forward, whether it's one way or the other. And now the one thing that worries me is that the EU has been quietly building a CBDC where they haven't even really been like kind of like, I don't really hear too many people talking about it, but I think it's kind of connected to France and Italy trying to tax Bitcoin and crypto, you know, to higher amounts. Like they're, I think it was France is talking about, you know, taxing unrealized gains on.
I think they passed big, that, didn't they?
No, I think it was just proposed. Italy tried to pass like increasing capital gains from like 20 to like 45%. And I think it got shot down. But I think that these taxes are kind of connected where it's like, all right, we're not going to outlaw Bitcoin, but we're just going to make it a pain in the ass for you. And hey, use this CBDC and it's going to be easier. And as we've seen in the past, if something's a little bit easier, even if it gives up some of the privacy, people are going to use it.
Yeah, I mean, I think more important than anything, even more important than Bitcoin stuff, obviously that helps, but just educating the public on how CBDCs are a one-way ticket to serfdom. I think that's, you know, they talk about in the Bible, the mark of the beast, like that really is the final blow to your freedom, because at that point they can control what you eat, you can control what you say, what you are and aren't allowed to do, and that's just the worst possible outcome. So that's a lot of what drives me is trying to build a future that isn't like that, that isn't constrained and surveilled.
Yeah. And I think that, I always think it's interesting, right? Because Bitcoin in a sense is, you know, it's an open source ledger, right? So like every transaction you can see, you can find, but there's some sort of, I guess, like the narrative that, you know, like you said, the CoinJoin, where you could potentially, you know, Russia had came out and said that they were potentially looking into the use of Bitcoin for evading sanctions and things like that. Now, that doesn't necessarily help with the FUD that we've had, right? With you know, Bitcoin is used by criminals and kind of widely used by that aspect of things. Do you think that we're always going to have to be fighting some sort of FUD? Or do you think that because we're getting to a place where there's a strategic reserve, the government's embracing it, that, you know, maybe it's their backdoor way to requiring KYC for everything? And, you know, hey, Bitcoin's good, but they just want to know everything you're going to do with it.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a danger there. And that's why I think people need to remain vigilant with these privacy tools. I think Lightning is incredibly underrated in this respect. It has great sender privacy. With the advent of Bolt 12, it will have even better receiver privacy. So I think over time, we need to keep pushing on solutions like those that preserve privacy and make it much harder to enforce dumb regulations like that. And as you point out, as it decentralizes in terms of different nation states accepting it, you know, as long as you got the option to give two tall ones to your government, go somewhere else that will embrace Bitcoin and will embrace you as a free thinking human, then that's always better. So I'm hoping to see more nation state adoption. I almost want to hear what you think is going to happen next at the nation state level.
Nation state level. I mean, I think that there's going to be multiple nation states that pass a strategic reserve bill within 2025. If I had to put a number on it, I think like the betting odds, I would say, is like over under 5.5 this time. And I'd probably feel pretty confident taking that over right now. You know, the United States, Brazil is proposing it. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we see maybe Morocco or, you know, somebody like Saudi Arabia has been mining. We didn't see really anything out of Bitcoin MENA for that, but I wouldn't be surprised if something like that kind of comes about. And then multiple Latin American and European nations, I would say, are probably going to start that proposal. And then from like a little bit smaller of a level, I wouldn't doubt it if we have like 10, at least 10 states try to propose a Bitcoin strategic reserve within the United States, because we already have Pennsylvania, Texas, Florida, Wyoming, just to name a few, start to
Wisconsin's get Wisconsin's put in their pension funds.
Yeah, right? Yeah, Wisconsin's putting in their pension funds. So like all these states are looking at it as well of like a way to preserve wealth for them. So I think, you know, once we get the U.S. to pass it, maybe they do it. I saw an interview with Jack Mahler on Tim Pool. I guess he said that they're going to do a day one executive order. I don't know how true that is, or if Jack Maulers has been behind the scenes and had leaked maybe an NDA or something like that that he had to say, but I wouldn't be surprised if that is passed right away and that starts a snowball effect. And once that snowball effect comes, I think it's all pretty interesting because all these governmental policies, they put everything out, like what they're going to do, right? Like you're not going to know that, oh, the US is going to buy 5 Bitcoin today, 25 tomorrow. Like we don't really know. They're going to do it in some sort of pattern. So I don't know, like maybe that gets priced in initially, but I think that that's, or it gets priced in over time, but I don't think initially it's going to be priced in until these things happen and then they start buying. And then I think when they start buying, that's when price is just going to shoot up like crazy because people are going to be trying to price these things in. And we're going to have like 6+ countries at my estimation here, you know, be buying up Bitcoin rapidly.
Calling all shadowy supercoders. I've got an event specifically for you. That's right. I am working with PlebLab to help out with Top Builder. Top Builder, it's like the Top Chef, but for shadowy supercoders. They've got a Bitcoin prize worth of $15,000 that you can earn when you showing off your skills. But not only that, you will gain valuable exposure, mentorship, and great collaboration opportunities. And a lot of people raised money last year, not just the winner. So you have the potential to show your stuff. All you got to do is sign up now. Between now and December 31st, go through 3 rounds where you are showing your skills. And then at the end, you will showcase your stuff at Startup Day down in Austin. So go ahead and sign up now and get everything started for Top Builder and showcase your stuff and help build in the Bitcoin ecosystem. All right, enough for me. Back to the show.
I think fixed supply breaks people's brain because they can't understand it. Like the only real analogy you could make is like a kick-ass penthouse in Manhattan. Like there's only so many of them. Like what else really has? Like even in Manhattan, they can make new buildings, right? They can figure out how to cram more people on top of each other, but you can't really. It's the most inelastic supply it could possibly be.
Yeah.
When there's a bid, there's a bid. Like that's what people don't understand. Like if you're an engineer, I always think of like tensile strength. You ever do tensile testing?
Yeah.
You try to rip apart a piece of metal and see, you know, basically it's called stress over strain. So stress is how hard you're pulling it apart in force, and then strain is how much it gives. And it hits a certain point and it goes like this, where it just totally gives up
material
at the atomic level, gives up. It's like that with getting Bitcoin. When Bitcoin gets a bid, it gets a freaking bid. It just goes nuts.
Yeah. Jack Maulers, when he was on the pod, made a good analogy in a sense. He said it like, all right, Taylor Swift tickets, for example, right? If Taylor Swift went to every single city, had a concert every single day, those tickets wouldn't be very valuable, right? Because like, all right, she comes to Austin, she'll go to San Antonio, she'll go to, you know, who knows, like, Bernie, she goes to some, like all these small towns too, like around the Austin area or whatever it is. So like, no matter what, you don't really have to travel far. But if she had one concert, she's like, this is going to be my last concert ever. It's going to be in Miami, New York, wherever. And you know, I'm only going to sell 100,000 worth of those. Like with her rabid fan base, those tickets will be like 10 grand a piece or something crazy because, you know, it's going to be the last one and then that's it. Right. So it's like, maybe that's a good example for, I don't know, maybe not the full audience, but like, that's, you know, kind of what I think of, like, you know, like when, or like sports, for example, when everybody knew it was like Michael, this could be Michael Jordan's last season, like people were rumbling, they were like selling out tickets. Like if you watch The Last Dance, you saw people just like,
that's like the best analogy. And what's funny to me is like Gold Bug's getting all pissed off at Bitcoiners now
because
Sailor's going hard saying we should sell gold. I don't know if that's true, but it is fun to mess with Gold Bugs, and they don't understand that like increasing 2% year over year or whatever it is has an effect, downward pressure on the price.
Yeah.
That you can't understand. It's like Bitcoin event is already issuing slower and it's going to keep getting issued slower. So that's going to have a massive effect over time.
Well, Gold Bugs, in a sense, like Gold Bugs have the heart in the right place, I think. It's just they don't, like, we find more gold every single day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like the El Salvador found like $3 trillion worth of unmined gold allegedly.
Whenever I see those, I always comment, how much Bitcoin did they find?
Yeah, I mean, exactly, right?
And,
so
the old buddies get mad at me. So.
Yeah. But we've gotten into the cypherpunk, Jim. Let's peel back the curtain here. Let's peel back the onion, so to speak, and find out a little bit about more who Jim is, right? So, Jim, you're an Italian guy, right? So give me your favorite cold cut, dude. What is it? Salami, pastrami? Like, what do you got here? If you, like, if you had an ultimate.
I like hot ham, actually.
Dude. Hot ham? That's not even Italian,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, it is, bro. What are you talking about?
Oh, man.
Dude, I'm like.
Okay, so what do you call it then? Because, like,
just hot ham, bro.
Just hot ham? Great. Isn't it like
when I was
Taylor
a little
ham?
Kid, I really loved turkey, and I was like, I want turkey, and I was throwing a tantrum. I was like, here you go. This is pink turkey.
Oh, yeah.
He gave it to me, and I ate it, and I liked it.
Well, isn't it from, like, don't they have the argument if it's like Taylor ham or something like that in the north, northeast?
I don't even know what Taylor ham is.
Okay. I don't know. I saw something about this on Jersey Shore, so I just imagine everybody in the northeast knew it.
Yeah. We have some great delis. My hometown's like halfway between Buffalo and New York City.
Okay.
So you got like a heavy Italian vibe.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's like very unique place.
Okay. So, all right. One's got to go. And I'll give you just rapid fire. You got to compare the two. So meatballs or pizza?
Pizza.
Pizza's got to go.
Yeah, dude.
You don't like pizza?
I like it, but dude, meatballs, you haven't had you haven't had my grandmother's meatballs, man. I've been making them a bunch lately, dude. I've been learning. My mom was here and she was like, she made them for the plebsgiving.
What's the secret ingredient?
I wouldn't say it's a secret ingredient. I would say you got to have good parsley, obviously. The secret is you want to have bread that's been stale and you dip it in milk to make it like softer. So that's like one trick. Oh. And another trick is, it's harder to do, but you can get, you want two, the best ratio is 2 pounds of beef, 1 pound of pork and 1 pound of veal. Actually, the veal is harder to get though.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge.
But that's
you
the
can
secret
get that,
sauce right there.
Yeah. If you can get that trifecta right, then it's great. You can still make pretty good ones without the veal, but the veal makes another, it's another
what game. Does a veal bring to it, like an extra juiciness or what?
Yeah it's like an extra it? Tenderness and it's okay. Like I don't know how to describe it. It's good though.
Yeah, that sounds, now I'm getting hungry.
Are you looking for a way to earn some free sats? Who isn't? Well, I've got the perfect way for you. It's an app called Yopaki. Besides having the absolute coolest name in the game, they've got an interactive card game called Lotteria. Oh, look at that accent. I'm just hitting it, huh? That can teach you the history of Bitcoin and financial literacy. They've got amazing services and one of the slickest mobile wallets. Download it now using this link and you can get 500 sats on the house on Green Candle, and then you can play Lotteria every single day in order to potentially get some sats. All you got to do is match the cards, and it's an extremely fun and interactive way to learn more about Bitcoin. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so what's another Italian thing that I was going to ask? Oh, yeah, favorite kind of cheese. I'm lactose intolerant, so I'm not going to have any kind of opinion on this, but we all know the Italians love the cheese.
I love all kinds of cheese. I'm going to sound dumb. I like brie cheese on certain stuff. Like if you, one of my buddies was a big chef in college and he would make pork tenderloin with brie cheese and apple. And it sounds weird, but it's like the best tailgate ever.
Yeah.
So I would like bring that to tailgates and stuff.
People. Oh, wait, say that again. So brie cheese, apple.
Apple and pork tenderloin. And you can marinate it in whatever like extra flavor you want. But
why the apple?
Because it just gives it a crisp, it just gives it like a crisp taste. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then how often do you hit the gym tan laundry?
I don't tan that much. I guess I live in Austin, and when I can, I'll walk around with my shirt off just to get the extra vitamin D. I was actually, yesterday I was tanning a little bit. I was reading a book and tanning. I basically live at Pleb Lab, so we're across the street from Gold's Gym, and I go there.
Yeah, there we go.
As many days as I can make myself.
Yeah,
too much work. So.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, then what's your favorite Italian stereotype and your least favorite?
Favorite and least favorite. I mean, least favorite is that we're all in the mob. I mean, it's kind of ironic because I have family that like explicitly defied the mob on both sides. So,
well, your family is what, in the waste management business?
Yeah, and they were legit. Yeah, so like that's one example. And then it's like, yeah, I have like family that's like prosecutors and stuff. So it's like, all right, you know, that's
well, yeah, you got to have them on both sides in case family gets in trouble, right? So yeah. You got to help.
Yeah, so that's probably like my least favorite. I'm sure they what my favorite is. I mean, I guess our food, right? Our food being great. I mean, the temper is kind of funny, like the way of speaking, like the lingo. Well, the lingo is funny. Like, it's not really Italian as much as Italian American. Like the stuff my dad says from his old neighborhood is hilarious.
Yeah.
I'll say him around Carr and make him laugh all the time.
Yeah. And then how big do you think Tommy DeVito, excuse me, has been for Italians and Italian Americans? For those who don't know.
I don't know. He keeps fucking losing. So oh, I don't damn. Know about that. Like, I don't want to be.
Oh, so are you saying tension?
But it's not totally his fault. I'm a Giants fan. So yeah, that's a funny question. My mom loves him. She's like this all
yeah.
the time.
Yeah. Yeah. For those who don't know, it's like the hand, like yeah. the Italian hand emoji that everybody knows. But Jim, you've been very generous with your time. So I appreciate you coming on the show and having some fun here. Why don't you tell people where they can find out more about Cascader and more about you?
Yeah. Visit us on cascader.xyz. That's CASCDR.xyz. You can follow us on X. You can follow us on LinkedIn. And also we're doing, we've raised funds from some really great angels, but we're also doing a crowdfund on timestamp. So if you're a pleb, if anything I said, any of the cypherpunk stuff I said resonates with you and you want to support us in our mission and possibly earn a return, go ahead and check us out on Timestamp Financial. I'll send the link to Brandon so you can put it in the description. So the minimum's pretty low. So we want to make the opportunity that for plebs, we're building it for the people. We want them to be able to participate in this with us. So excited what we're building. And go ahead and check out Pull That Up, Jamie.ai. That's the Jamie tool that Brandon's been raving about, where you're able to pretty much replace Google from your life. You'll be able to take back your sovereignty, not be surveilled, get a superior product in my eyes, and help support us.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll link all that in the show notes. Support Jim, support Cascader with the timestamp. And yeah, use Jamie. It's absolutely great. Green candle stamp of approval. So Jim's doing a great job and he works his ass off. So he's trying to help you guys be not spied on while you're using AI. So support the man. And Jim, thanks so much, boss.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us. And one last thing I want to say is this guy works his ass off too. You guys need to like and subscribe right now. Support this guy. He's going straight to the top. He's been in the lab with us every day and, you know, he's working as hard as these other entrepreneurs that are, you know, putting their entire life savings into their startup. He's busting his ass and you guys really should support him. He's putting out great material, getting great guests for you, burning the midnight oil. So like and subscribe, support Green Candle.
All right, man. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.